By the way, my name is Wayne. I liked the name Wayne until the fourth grade when my teacher was like, you know, Wayne is also a word. I go, I did not know that. She goes, yeah, it's a verb. I go, what does it mean, like to run or to play? She's like, oh, no, no. No, it means to diminish slowly over time. Even now, you're a little bit less than you were.
Thank you for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of The Mile High Show, and you are listening to episode number 86. This is a very special episode for me because I got the opportunity to record somebody I have admired for many, many years, Mr. Wayne Fetterman, a comic, author, performer, actor, musician. He's everything, and a very, very funny individual. And I interviewed a little different interview for me because typically I interview folks face to face, but he is a very busy man and was out of state. So I interviewed him through the telephone lines, and a little more difficult for me because I prefer, like I said, face to face. I like to disappoint people in person as opposed to long distance. So, but hopefully it will be as enjoyable for you to listen to as it was for me to record. Many reasons we're talking with Wayne today. One, because he's just talented and I was presented the opportunity to talk with him. But more importantly, is because he is on his way to Prescott. Well, I don't know if he's on his way right now. He's probably, well, at the time I'm recording this, he's probably asleep still. But this weekend, May 7th, he will be in Prescott at the Elks Theater and Opera House on Prescott's right there off of Whiskey Row. May 7th, 7 p.m., he will be headlining a comedy, stand-up, sketch, and improv show for the Mile High Comedy Theater. That is our local comedy and improv troupe led by Cynthia Kitsobo, who, by the way, set this whole interview up. So thank you, Cynthia. I will thank you in person on Saturday when I see you at the Prescott Elks Theater to watch you guys, your troupe, as well as today's guest, Wayne Fetterman. Today's show is brought to you by Amazon, where you can use the Amazon link at milehighshow.com, my own website, to order The Chronicles of Fetterman. He has been in the scene for decades, and recently, this past year, has put together 30 years of his library, comedic library, on a 3-CD set, The Chronicles of Fetterman, that you can get at Amazon by using the Amazon link at milehighshow.com. What it does is it directs you directly to your standard login page, whether that be for Amazon or Amazon Prime. Doesn't cost you an extra dime, but it does let Amazon know you got to them through us, and they give the Mile High Show a little thank you in return. So check out Wayne in person this Saturday, May 7th, as he headlines the Mile High Comedy Theater at the Elks Opera House in Prescott. PrescottElksTheater.com is where you can find ticket information on that. WayneFetterman.com is where you can find out all the information about today's guest, Mr. Wayne Fetterman. So, again, thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Cynthia. And thank you for tuning in. And sit back and enjoy my conversation with the great Wayne Fetterman. If you're ready to go, we can jump in now.
Let's do it.
Okay. My main goal, of course, is to promote and get as many folks aware of you coming into our area at the Prescott Elks Theater on May 7th, which will be a week or so after we post this, for a show with the Mile High Comedy Theater, an improv and comedy troupe up in our neck of the woods. How did that come about? Why are we blessed to have the great Wayne Fetterman coming up to our area?
Well, first of all, thank you for the exaggeration. I appreciate it. That's nice. This gig came about, or are you talking about how I came about? You need to know about birthing and junior high school. What do you need to know? How far back do you need to go?
We can get into as much of that as you'd like.
Well, let me ask you this. I am very curious about that theater that I heard was once an opera house. Do you know anything about it, Matty?
I don't know anything about the history. I've been in there to cover shows in the past many times. I work with local media here, primarily as a photographer. That's my background. And I know it's just a beautiful theater. I'm glad that the management there has gone through. I've been in this area about 12 years or so, and they were in the process of a remodel and restoration when I moved up here. And they're doing a fantastic job. It's just beautiful. But the history goes, you know, 100 years plus back there. And I don't know a whole lot about the history.
So there's 100 years of history you know zero of.
I know very little about a lot of things. And the Elks Theater is just one of those things I don't know very much on. I get stuck at, not stuck, that's a bad way to say it. I visit a lot of our historic places around here, but it's always work-related, and I pop in and out so fast. That's one of the reasons I started doing this podcast, is that I can go in and spend time and kind of hang out with the folks and the places that I normally only see for a few minutes. And so it's,
right.
This whole podcast is a purely selfish motive on my part to get out of the house more.
I love it. And of course, you're in your house right now.
I'm in my garage.
That's what I'm saying. So it's not really helping at all.
Not a bit. And it's not a real nice garage. Unlike, you know, I guess that's where podcasts are supposed to be done now. You know, Marin and Fitzsimmons and a bunch of other guys that I listen to. But their garages sound a lot nicer than mine. But I guess the level of talent there corresponds to that. So I don't have any talent, so I have to sit in a real bad garage. It's dirty.
All right. Well, I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to get the image, but I'm looking forward to hitting this theater. It looks amazing.
It looks amazing. It is beautiful, and a lot of history in there. And from what I understand, some of the past performers, this is the legend anyway, that past performers from the 1800s and early 1900s still wander the hallways. And that's...
I don't believe in ghosts, but... or maybe they're just... You're saying they're super old performers.
Probably a little bit of both. I'm not much on the paranormal myself. That's just kind of the rumors and the legends there.
You call it the paranormal.
Is that? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. I guess that's correct.
Well, you have a history of your own. I'm looking forward to an order I put in through Amazon a couple of days ago for my my personal copies of the Chronicles of Fetterman.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Now, I am looking forward to that. I'm a fan of yours, of your stand-up going back a few years. And I think one of the first recollections of me seeing you perform was, and I went back through YouTube, and I think it might have been like an MTV show or one of those 80s.
Yeah.
And I cannot listen to Dokken without thinking of you. In your routine about your visit to a Dokken concert is...
Yes, well, we're talking about two things. One was just last year I put out my very first comedy album, which is a 3-CD retrospect of my career, 30-year retrospect. And because I don't ask why I've never put one out, it never happened. So it starts in... I guess the first bit is from 84, about the 84 Olympics, and the last one's from 2015, so that's the end of last year. And one of the bits on there is the classic, and by classic, I mean by the maybe 1,000 people who remember it, routine about going to see a Dokken concert and what happened there. But I'm assuming you saw that on, there was a show called the MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour.
I believe that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah.
You're all in black.
Right.
You're the man in black for that one. That and I had the opportunity to see Dokken perform, oh, I want to say late 80s, early 90s at the Keystone mm-hmm. in Palo Alto in the San Francisco Bay Area. And my appraisal of the concert is much as the same as yours. I was there for work, and it wasn't my favorite show. How?
Well, it wasn't. I was just having fun with it.
Yeah. How that's such a large
here's
project.
A little bit of Fetterman trivia for you.
Please.
The Dokken, when I saw Dokken in concert, it wasn't a Dokken concert. It was Dokken was opening for Aerosmith.
Ah.
Now that's how I got the Dokken show. Just so you know, not many people know that. A little trivia.
You are full of interesting facts. I've gotten I'm regressing here. I want to try and stay. I get off into weird tangents, and I want to try and stay as focused as I can because I know we don't have a lot of time with you. That Chronicles of Fetterman, the 3-CD set, is such a huge undertaking to compile that. Was that something you had been working on to compile, or, I mean, did you have that library built up, or did you have to go out and hunt some of that footage down?
Now, for the most part, it's, I had it in the, my own archives, which, and archives sound so formal as opposed to just, some tapes on my shelf in my bedroom, as opposed to this vault where you have to go in and there's a security guard there.
So you you didn't have the Fetterman library set up.
I didn't really have the Fetterman library set up, nor did I have like a vault or anything, but I did have some stuff, and I always wondered, was wondering what was going to happen with it. And the record company reached out to me, and I was like, "Yeah, let's do this." It's been surprisingly well received. I went on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon to help promote it, and then a lot of websites put it on their top 10 list of the year. I don't know, but it's sort of like it's a unique album in that it's. You get the whole kind of like development of a comedian as they started in comedy clubs and then went to LA after like 8 years and then worked in comedy clubs there and then moved to theaters and some television tapings and things like that. So it's really fun. And by the end, the last cuts are like from, I'm over like in Israel doing stand up. And I entertain the, the one thing I wanted was, that I didn't get, as I did a couple tours of Iraq for the troops during the war,
mm-hmm.
and I never really recorded those. So those were really fun shows as well, recording, performing for those kids. I'd say kids, they were young men. And women.
Yeah, you've got a clip or two of you. I think it's in a helicopter on your website your history.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all we had. We shot a little stuff of me kind of traveling, but none actually doing stand-up. So I'm a little disappointed in that.
Yeah,
I'm now upset that I even brought it up. I hope this didn't ruin this whole interview.
Any plans on going back to overseas and maybe capturing some?
Well, I'd like to. I'd like to go to, I know there's still combat troops in Afghanistan, so I would be happy to go back.
Well,
I never served in the military, so I feel like I'm not comparing what I do to what those guys do, the bravery level, but it's something I really feel honored and am happy to do anytime.
Yeah, to get over there and give those folks some of the entertainment that they desperately need. Now, I don't know if you know much about this part of the state up in northern Arizona, but
Here's what I do know. I used to date a girl from Jerome, which I think is not that far away from where you're at.
No, about 40 minutes or so from Prescott and right over the hill from where I am in Chino Valley. What years was that? Did you come out here and visit her here?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. Once. Yeah. You had it was like an old copper mine or something kind of mine.
Old mining
town.
Old mining town.
Yeah.
Great little restaurants and boutiques and stuff. Some great music up
there. I loved
it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
I loved it. But I guess what you're going to say that there's a lot of retired veterans?
Well, that, but which there is, and there's a very well-known and VA hospital here in Prescott that is serves a lot of the folks up here and from around the country, actually. It's one of the better VAs from what I've heard.
Uh-huh.
But also, if you can't get overseas to perform for the troops, there is a just outside of Prescott, another mining town, Bagdad, Arizona, which isn't quite war torn, but if you just wanted to get that under your belt, to get some footage of you performing in Bagdad, Arizona, not quite the original Bagdad, but kind of remote,
well,
that we might be able to set you up with a few minutes mic time at the gas station there, if you'd like.
All right. Well, let me think about that.
Now, you have, again, with your compilation, 30 years worth of performing, you have worked with and written for some of the greats, and I saw going through on your website, might as well mention that here if I can get my glasses on, waynefetterman.com. There's a great link there for kind of your history throughout showbiz, starting with some very early footage of you with the great Bob Hope on a TV.
Right.
What was the history with that?
Well, that was, okay, this is what happened. I went to New York University to study acting in the late 70s. And Bob Hope was taping this morning show. He was like, I want to talk to the young comedians and see what they're doing. So I was already doing stand up at college, but I wasn't like a professional. And so I heard about this, so I went down to the taping. And they're like, is there any of the young comedians that want to ask some questions? And I've always like kind of suffered from stage fright, although lately I feel like I, for the most part, have it under control. And so I asked them about that, and that's where that little exchange came from.
And I found it, I guess, you know, as fashion changes, he was making a jibe at your outfit while he was wearing this insanely plaid sport coat. Which
I know.
Kind of funny.
Of course.
the acting that you did, I'm doing a little research. This was not something I was really familiar with. Your history with acting, you did not
right. You
that
knew me
light.
Just as the MTV half hour comedy hour guy.
Well, and through your stand up and your
right.
songs and your movie work, which was extremely extensive. I didn't realize that had gone that deep until I started going through your IMDb and noticing. Oh yeah, I remember you from that, and I remember you from that. It's really extensive and pretty impressive on the listing of what you have appeared in. But acting was not something you took lightly. You studied with some heavyweights, huh?
Yeah. When I went to NYU, you could study either with Stella Adler or Lee Strasberg were the main two programs there. I picked Adler because I don't want to go drill too deep into this, but modern acting kind of started with this guy called Stanislavski with the Moscow Arts Theater, and she actually studied with him in Paris for a couple months. So I thought she was also Marlon Brando's
yeah.
teacher, and he did pretty well, right, with acting. Not well with diet, not great with diet, but excellent with acting. So I was like, let me go with that. But I also went to Manny Strasberg, who was just kind of more lecturing as opposed to teaching at that time, classes there as well. So it was really fun. It was the end of those, you know, the era of those guys.
Was that the direction that you had planned on going, the serious acting before comedy, or was...
No. This was the plan, the Fetterman plan. Early when I lived in Florida, when I was just a kid, was to be a comedian who could also act. Like that was the plan.
That very interesting. Now, did the acting help you with your stage presence, or was the goal to move into comedic films and that route, or a little bit of both?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't really. Yeah, I really think there were kind of two different tools. To tell you the truth, I hate to break it down into baseball terms, but I feel like stand up. You're basically the writer, the director, the performer, obviously, you know, you're sort of creating the whole thing. So it's very much your baby. You're in control. Whereas acting, it's not what you want to say. It's somebody else's lines. It's you're told where to stand. Somebody points to you and you talk, and then you try desperately. To create what looks like a living situation under very false circumstances. That's really what acting is. So they're two completely different tools.
Do you have a preference of what you, obviously your success
yes,
on
I do.
Stand-up
it's called stand-up.
Stage.
I prefer stand-up.
That's
I prefer
it.
Stand-up.
Do you consider
no
yourself?
No question, but.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say.
No, I'm saying I prefer stand-up. I know. This is the problem because we're not face-to-face. We're talking on the phone. And I don't mean to talk over you, but I prefer stand-up for creativity. Although I will tell you this, I do like being in movies just for the ego part of it. That, which is, just like, oh. Because I'm a movie fanatic. Like, yeah. I know a lot about the movies. I've seen a lot of them. I actually have my own film festival out here. I do a lot. I just love movies. I love them.
That, and your film festival, the Wayne Fetterman International Film Festival, this is year 5,
yes.
Correct?
Correct.
Now, I was reading an article, and I apologize. I didn't write down where it appeared, but it was a story on the 5th annual, the one that just passed. And there was an interesting quote in there, and I'd like you to comment on how, if this is specifically for relating to the film festival, if it also goes into other aspects of your life. They asked about, the writer had asked about or mentioned about how the comics choose different films to watch and discuss, and that's not something you partake in. You host it, and what was quoted in the article is because you get enough attention already. It's your festival. It has your name on it. But does that also translate into other aspects? Because you mentioned you like being in films because of what it does for your ego and lets you stretch a different artistic muscle. But is that humility, does that go through the rest of your life pretty much? Or because most comics that I observe and that I've talked to, and I haven't talked to a whole lot, but it's that desire to be in the spotlight, to have that control of the mic for that 5, 10 or hour, whatever you're performing. And for a comic to say, I don't need the attention, to me sounds not normal. Is that representative of you as a person or just with the festival?
No. I mean, the weird thing is that's a multi-leveled question.
It's a rambling question.
Specifically to the festival. Yeah. Specifically to the festival, I mean, it's ridiculous. My name is in the name of the festival. So it's like I get enough attention for that specific project that I'm like, oh, it's Wayne Fetterman, it's this dude, whatever. In the big picture, every comedian wants to be famous, not so much because you're like, oh, I want to be the famous person, but like that's the biggest prize you can get as a comedian, because then you can travel the world and you can sell out places and you can do what you want to do all the time. So it's I'm still. Struggling, but still, I'm keeping my focus on that as well. So,
gotcha.
And but You know, I mean, I'm a comedian. I'm a working comedian. I have a pretty good body of work, but I wouldn't say I'm like super famous comedian on the level of, let's say, a Louis C.K. or Amy Schumer, or, you know, even going back to what we were talking about earlier, like Bob Hope or Carlin, or I'm not in any of those leagues as far as fame. So yes, I would like more attention, but I do like my career also. I like every part of my career now. So it's not like I'm upset or I'm focused on it every morning where I wake up, like, why can't I be as famous as, you know, Patton Oswalt or something.
Yeah.
So that's, I know that's a crazy answer to that question.
Do you think some of that, of you not being obsessed with it, because, you know, a lot of folks do, you know, especially in the age of social media with Twitter constantly checking, seeing how many followers, seeing how many retweets, how many interactions. Does it help you to not get so caught up in that because you've spread out so much in the area of, you know, writing, performing, acting, stand up. You've been able to be successful in so many different avenues. Does that help you not obsess about any one or the other?
Maybe. That's a good question. I don't know. I just I don't think I have that like a burning, like, every day, that's all I think about, kind of. Because I think when you see my comedy, and hopefully you come to the show, it's on in a couple weeks.
May
7th, right?
May 7th at 7 p.m. at the Prescott Elks Theater.
7-7, yeah. Hopefully you'll come to the show. I don't want to force you to. You don't have to. Yeah, you'll see. You'll see, like, I really, like, I take my most pride in, like, my work. Well, you know, that, what I do on stage. So that I focus on, but not so much like, how can I, you know, cause if you follow me on Twitter, which is at Fetterman, I don't tweet a lot. I don't tweet a lot. So maybe I should, but well, these are good questions. I don't know. So let's just leave it at that.
Well, again, tackled so many different mediums, and like you said, on Twitter at Fetterman and Instagram, Insta Fetterman. Was Fetterman already taken?
Yes.
I'm just curious. Was it already taken?
The straight. I think it was. I think I tried to get it, but it was too late.
Yeah, your writing. Different projects that you've done. I read a few articles where you've kind of dissected comedy a little bit, but you've also gone in completely other directions. What was it, about 10 years or so ago, your book on Pete Maravich. How did that come about? First off, what the title, and it's also available on Amazon, so you can go through the
Amazon. If you're interested or remember about this phenomenal basketball player lived for 40 years, yeah.
Do you
remember him at all?
I do. I remember back when, specifically, when New Orleans moved to Utah and kept the name of the Jazz. He was, what, 1 or 2 years there before retiring?
He was less than a year there.
Really?
Less than a year. And then actually moved to Boston and played there with Larry Bird and then retired.
What was the germination of that project? Why are you just a sports fanatic? Were you a Maravich fanatic?
No, but I am a bit of a I wouldn't use the word fanatic. I would say I'm a basketball lifer. I still play basketball. It's my favorite sport. And I was fascinated by the Pete Maravich story when I came across it. I was more of like a Dr. J fan when growing up.
Yeah.
And the more I learned about Pete, there's a very Shakespearean aspect to his career. And there had never been an authorized biography other than his autobiography that was, I felt, a little incomplete. And so we contacted, and here's the interesting Arizona connection. A writer here in Arizona named Marshall Terrell had started the process and then brought me on. So that's actually how I got involved with it.
What grabbed you about the Pistol Pete story? You say it's Shakespearean. In what way? What were some of the things
for myself, who's not
real familiar with his life?
Okay, well, I'll do it in a nutshell. But Pete Maravich was remember we were talking about being obsessed and focused on being famous earlier in this conversation. Well, Pete Maravich as a kid was consumed by the idea of being a great basketball player. And basically, during the school year, would practice 4 hours a day, and during the summer, 8 hours a day by himself, learning this remarkable array of skills to the point where he was like beyond what anyone could believe you could do with the basketball. Like, finally now with Steph Curry and all, like, it's kind of catching up to what he was doing back then in the, you know, 60s and 70s. He goes to LSU, coached by his father, and sets scoring records that still stand today. This is before they have the three-point shot. It's so easy for him to put in baskets, dribble behind his back. It's like a globetrotter in a real game. So he becomes this legend. He's on the cover of magazines. He goes to the pros. Pros is not fun for him. Like, he finds that people have different agendas, that the sports writers don't like his sort of fancy ball handling and skill set with fancy passes. So he becomes depressed and actually ends up not liking playing basketball. Again, this is the Shakespearean part. This is someone who basically threw away his childhood so he could be this great basketball player and ends up not liking playing basketball. So his one dream to make this all worthwhile is to win a championship to mitigate all this criticism. Sure enough, he comes very close with the Celtics at the very end, but it doesn't happen. He blows out his knee a couple of years earlier. I'm going a little out of order here, but it's he comes close, but he can't do it. He can't scale that wall. It's like, I think Sisyphus is the Greek story where it goes up the mountain and it goes back down. So he retires. He's despondent. Finally finds some peace with religion and kind of comes to term with his basketball career and playing a pickup game, dies of a heart attack at age 40. This is Pete Maravich again, mm-hmm. who scored more points than anyone who's ever played college basketball and is still top 20 in the history of the NBA in scoring average. So he's like one of the – so just amazing, amazing, otherworldly player. They do an autopsy, and they find out that he's born with a defect in his heart, that he's born without, left ventricle. So he shouldn't have lived to the age of 20.
Let alone accomplished what he did on the court.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. And if you saw him play, he's played with a certain high-speed ferociousness that was just spectacular to watch. So for all those reasons, I was like, wow, that is really a compelling story. Because most sports stories are tough childhood, overcomes a thing, gets there, and then wins a championship and is happy, you know, Secretariat, all of that kind of stuff. Even Jackie Robinson, they're all like, they win a World Series. This is the other side of that story. So it really was very compelling to me, and that's why I thought it would make a great movie and would also, you know, make this great book. Yeah. So that's how I got involved.
And the title of the book again?
Just Maravich. Maravich by Wayne Fetterman and Marshall Terrell, with cooperation with Jackie Maravich, which is Pete's widow.
Yeah. And just a little self-plug here. You can get that through Amazon by using the Amazon link at milehighshow.com. How's that? Weaving in a commercial?
I like that. I like your move.
Now, if we can, I know you need to get, I don't want to take up your whole morning, but I do want to touch on on something, another basketball fan pickup games that used to happen every Sunday, according to what I've read. And your friend, Mr. Gary Shandling, who recently passed.
Mm-hmm.
If you can touch on one, your relationship with Gary and what he meant to the comedy community, not just in Southern Cal, but worldwide.
Well, it's interesting because just this is, we're talking, this is Tuesday morning. Right now we're recording this. Uh-huh. You might be hearing it on a different time. We, on Sunday night, we had a big memorial here out in California for him, which I was very much, you know, involved with. And, you know, he was just a dear, he was a big supporter of mine. I don't know why. He really took a shining to me. And one of the great honors I had in my life, besides playing in that basketball game for 20 years every Sunday, was being on the Larry Sanders Show and playing Gary Shandling's, I mean, Larry Sanders' brother, Stan Sanders. So it was a real honor, especially because I don't know if you know, in real life, Gary Shandling had an older brother who passed away. And one of the reasons, you know, Gary is from Arizona. I'm sure you know that.
Yes.
And one of the reasons he lived there was his was for medical reasons for his older brother who was sick.
Wow. That,
I don't know if you, I mean, I don't know if that still happens, but when I was a kid, there was a lot of times when people would have certain diseases and stuff that, like, the prescription was, we'll move the kid to the dry climate of Arizona, and you won't have to deal with it.
Yeah,
like, does that still happen out there?
You know, I not to my knowledge, I don't know. But again, it's one of the many things I know nothing about. But yeah, respiratory respiratory issues, the dry climate.
Yeah,
a lot of people get here. You know, of course, to get out of the colder climates of the Midwest and the East Coast. But Shandling's impact on the comedy scene in the late 70s, early 80s in L.A. And continued through with the Gary Shandling Show and Larry Sanders and just groundbreaking on so many levels. And
no question.
To be able to work side by side with that talent.
Well, it was, you know, and I mean, without getting too personal, it was just fascinating for me from going from like a crazy fan of his to being on the show and hoping that I did a good job. You know, again, going back to my acting roots was a little more of that, was very helpful in that situation. And then he would come out and watch me do stand up and give me notes till right till the end. We were talking on the phone, and I would see him, and would see him every Sunday, and we became very close, like friendship, like texting each other. So that whole arc was very interesting, and I really hold it very, that friendship was very special for me.
Well, what a great sentiment. Now, he also, if I have my information correct, Gary Shandling was the first one in the inaugural season of your film festival. Is that correct?
Yes, he was the very first one, first screening. That was 5 years. Well, I guess 4 years ago, even though we just did the fifth one. And he showed a movie. My festival, just to recap, is I have comedians select a film they love, and they introduce it with me. We screen it, and then we do a Q&A afterwards about the movie and what we saw, and so that's it. So, like, for example, we had Aziz Ansari did Back to the Future, and there was a comedian named Dana Gould who did Dr. Strangelove, and we just had Tig Notaro out here, and she did Urban Cowboy. But the very first one was Gary Shandling, and he did The King of Comedy, the 1983 Martin Scorsese movie, how that influenced the aesthetics of the Larry Sanders Show. So it was just great. So I really am indebted to him for even kicking off the whole idea of that festival.
And what a great premise for a festival, because like you mentioned some of the titles there, it's not necessarily comedies that they're discussing. It's just films that had an impact on them.
I know. Like,
yeah.
Exactly. There was a movie, Bill Burr. I don't know if you're familiar with this comedian.
Oh, yeah.
He selected this 1967 Robert Aldrich movie called The Dirty Dozen, which is a war picture.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so with Cassavetes and Jim Brown's in it, and I think Ernest Borgnine's in it.
Charles Bronson.
Yeah, the whole gang. Yeah. The bunch of misfits. So, that was a fascinating screening. So you get to sort of learn about the comedian through their choices of film.
Yeah, you mentioned Dana Gould. I had the privilege to photograph one of his shows a couple of weeks ago, out here in Phoenix, down south from where we are, and just a dynamo on stage. He is extremely, extremely entertaining to watch, and I've been a fan of his for a number of years as well. Much like I am a fan of yours, Mr. Wayne Fetterman, for decades.
Thank you. That's nice company.
Yeah.
I hold Dana Gould in very high regard. I really think he's a unique voice in stand-up.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate very much your taking some time to sit and let me record your voice. I am looking forward to meeting you in person on May 7th.
I can't wait. You're going to be there.
Yes,
you're going to be there.
I will be there, and if it's okay with you, I will be taking some photographs as well.
Absolutely. How does that work? Now, after you take the photographs, do I have to buy them from you?
No.
What's the system?
I will give you whatever you want from your time at the Elks Theater.
Okay.
Like I say, I do some work for local media up here. I was with our one and only paper for about 8-9 years, and now freelance with some online publications up this way. And of course, I'm going to want some photographs to go along with my website, milehighshow.com. And I'm looking forward to it. And if it should be, according to my Amazon account, my copy of Chronicles of Fetterman should be here a couple of days before that show. So if it's okay with you, I want to bring it in and let you scribble on it for me, if that's all right.
Okay, I have to say something about that.
Uh-huh.
This is minutia. I'm happy to sign anything, anytime. But for some reason, the cover of that, and it opens up, it's a 3-CD thing. You'll see, it's quite fun. It's like, I don't know if I have the right kind of pen. Like, I've tried the Sharpie, I've tried the silver Sharpie. I might be one of those pens where you have to push down and get the ink going. Do you know those things?
Yeah, it's a little probably too
slick. What are those pens called?
They are the pens that wreck my shirts, is what they're called.
Yeah, they're terrible. So I might not be able to. I'll sign something. I'll definitely sign something, but it might be the disc.
I'm going to figure this out.
This is weird. You know, I've never had a CD, so this is all new to me. And I'm probably going to bring 10 CDs to sell.
Great.
That'll be it.
What I'll do, just in case, is I have this notepaper in front of me where I have your website, a couple of little notes, and then another note that I scribbled on the top that says, turn off web and data on my phone so we wouldn't get interrupted on phone calls. I'm going to bring that on May 7th at 7 p.m. to the Prescott Elks Theater. And if you can't sign the CD, I'll have you sign my, if it's okay with you, sign my notepad here.
I love it.
And again, tickets for that show, PrescottElksTheater.com. You can pick up tickets there or, of course, buy them at the door on May 7th. One quick question before we go, and then I'll let you go. FeralAudio.com is where you can find the archives of Human Conversation with Wayne Fetterman and Aaron McGathy. Now, social media, the web, podcasting has made it so we can constantly get entertained by folks at any time, whenever we want. So I am slowly catching up to the Human Conversation. I've downloaded all the archives and we'll binge listen to them. I was just going through the last couple. Is it going to continue now that Aaron is overseas?
Well, you know, again, I thank you for listening to that. Yeah, Aaron is back for a couple months from Ireland. It's a whole story about myself and this girl, Aaron McGaffey. She's back, and we're going to do a couple bonus. We're going to call it the summer season or something like that. So there's going to be a few more bonus ones. And, yeah, but it will continue, but not the way it was where it was an every week kind of situation.
Well, that will give me time to binge through. Now, I jumped right in at one of the last couple was when I started and got to listen to a conversation about going to a strip club. So I will have to go through and listen to the rest of them. I would love to sit and talk with you more. Again, you've been so kind to carve out some time this morning to record, but I just encourage folks to Google Wayne Fetterman, go through and read all about you, your career. Pick up a copy of Chronicles of Fetterman. If you can't do it online, show up at the Prescott Elks Theater to pick up your copy in person. But you've through your writing, there were several articles that I read over the past few days where you're analyzing comedy and humor and kind of the state of comedy. I can't remember exactly where it was from. I'll link it online, but you kind of dissected the way comedy is digested these days with, again, podcasts and social media and things. So I encourage folks to find out as much as they can about Wayne Fetterman.
Yeah, I loved writing that article.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for even reading it. I appreciate it. I'm very touched.
One of the books that I've gotten recently is The Comedians by Cliff Nesteroff.
And, oh, yes. Yeah. That's a great book.
I haven't tackled the whole thing yet, but in preparation for this conversation, I went to the back and pulled up the pages where you were mentioned. And, I don't have it in front of me right now, but you caused me to go get that book from the 70s that you quoted in the Comedians by Cliff Nesteroff, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a history of comedy and stand-up from written in the 70s that I have ordered.
Oh, The Last Laugh.
That's
The Last
it. Laugh. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So I am waiting for that to arrive. And again,
oh my goodness, that book is not an easy read. He writes in a very jazzy. I know we're really drilling down deep into comedy nerddom here. I apologize, but he writes in a very kind of jazzy style. But it's interesting. You can glean a lot out of that book. But my favorite book written about stand up is outside of The Comedians, which is great. Is a book called. Oh, my goodness. Gerald Nachman wrote it. Now I'm blanking on the name of it. Something. I can't think of the name of it, but it's about the 50s and 60s, and it's really, really good. It's about Lenny Bruce and Jonathan Winters and all of those guys, Nichols and May, Woody Allen. It's really quite a book.
I will.
That I can't remember.
I will Google
but
that.
Gerald Nachman. Yeah, Gerald G E R A L D Nachman. And too early. Okay.
I'll look for it. But hey, I go through these jags where I get I just devour stuff. But I do it in binge form. So I lock myself away in my office and annoy my wife when I fall down these rabbit holes. So I will look.
All right.
I will look for that.
I look forward to meeting you, seeing you in Arizona at the Mile High. Do they have oxygen? Am I going to need oxygen?
No, I think we will be well oxygenated. I think that's a word when you show up. So I look forward to meeting you in person again. Thank you so much for carving out this time. I know we went a little longer than you had planned, so thank you again for that.
You're very welcome. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right, we'll see you on the 7th. Thanks again, Wayne. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, that was it. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Wayne Fetterman. Don't forget to come see him live this Saturday, May 7th at 7 p.m. at the Elks Theater, an opera house in Prescott, right there near the Courthouse Square. Ticket information for the May 7th show is available at PrescottElksTheater.com. All brought to you by the Mile High Comedy Theater and their director, Miss Cynthia Kitsobo. So thank you again, Cynthia, for setting this up. Thank you, Wayne, for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with me. Today's show is brought to you by Amazon, and you can pick up Wayne's compilation 3-CD set, The Chronicles of Fetterman, a history of his comedy from 1984 to 2014, 30 years worth of extremely funny comedy by Wayne Fetterman. The Chronicles of Fetterman, available at Amazon by using the Amazon link at milehighshow.com. And find out all about Wayne, waynefetterman.com, his Twitter, at Fetterman, Instagram, at InstaFetterman, and check out feralaudio.com. We talked a little bit about that. Again, feralaudio.com, which is a portal to tons and tons of podcasts and comedy content. And you can hear Wayne Fetterman and Aaron McGathy on The Human Conversation at feralaudio.com. Again, thank you, Wayne. Thank you for listening. And we will see you all May 7th for Wayne in person at the Elks Opera House.
I've seen a lot of performers, and the one person I never saw, and he's not performing anymore, and I never got tickets, now it's too late, is Beethoven. So what I'd like to do now, my impression of maybe what a Beethoven concert might be like. Please welcome, direct from Bonn, you know him, it's Beethoven.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here tonight.
Just so you know, because it's the last night of the tour, I'm just going to play the hits. Just going to play the hits. But I start every concert the same way with the question, are you ready to classical? Are you ready to classical? I can't hear you. No, I can't hear you. I'm completely deaf. It's a miracle I can play piano.